namaskritya naram cheva narutamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50, Chapter entitled Krishna Establishes Dwarka, Text Number 18. Still the microphone down? Just a little. Yeah, just a little. Tavarama Yadi Shraddha Yudyashwa Daryam Udvaha Hitwa Va Machcharaish Chinam Deham Swar Yahi Mam Jahi Tavarama Yadi Shraddha Yudyaswa Daryam Udvaha Hitvava Machcharais Chinnam Deham Swayahi Mamjahi Tavarama Yadi Shraddha Yudyaswa Daryam Udvaha Hitvava Machcharais Chinnam Deham Swaryahi Mam Jahi. Your Rama, O Balaram. Yadi, if Shraddha, confidence. Yudyasva, fight. Daryam, courage. Udvaha, take up. Hitwa, leaving aside. Va, either. Mat, mine. Sharai, by the arrows. Chinnam, cut to pieces. Deham, your body. Swaha, to heaven. Yahi, go. Mam, or else. Me. Jahi, kill. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. You, Rama, should gather your courage and fight with me, if you think you can do it. You may either give up your body when it is cut to pieces by my arrows, and thus attain to heaven, or else kill me. Translation responsibly. You, Rama, should gather your courage and fight with me, if you think you can do it. You may either give up your body when it is cut to pieces by my arrows, and thus attain to heaven, or else kill me. According to Acharya, Sridhar Swami, Jarasandha suspected that Lord Balaram's body was indestructible, and thus he offered what might be a more practical alternative, that Balaram kill Jarasandha. Text 19. The Supreme Lord said, real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and who wants to die. Text 20. Shukadeva Goswami said, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Matu, and with his huge assemblage of armies, surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses, and charioteers. purple. Acharya Sridhar points out that clouds Acharya Sridhar points out that clouds only seem to cover the sun. The sun remains shining in the vast sky. Nor is the potency of fire affected by a thin covering of dust. Similarly, the covering of Jarasandha's military strength was only apparent. Omigyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dati Swa Bhutantikam Pancha Kalpati Rubyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in the first verse, verse 18, Jarasandha has a realization, as the demons often do, about the supreme position of Krishna and Balaram. Same thing happened. The first demon who attempted to attack Krishna in his pastimes, who was the first demon who attacked Krishna?
Putana.
Putana. Right. So Putana...
No.
What's that? Putana was first. Yeah, then Shakata, then Trinavata. Oh, that's it. So Putana, when she held Krishna on her lap, then she had the realization that this was the supreme personality of Godhead himself. And having that realization, then she became fearful, but at that point in time it was too late for her to do anything, to flee. So then she took Krishna to her breast, and her breast was smeared with deadly poison. And then Krishna, being the Supreme Lord, sucked the life air from her body. And at that time, when she felt that the child was killing her, was taking her very life, she ran outside the palace of Nanda Maharaj, and she expanded herself, as demons do, into a 12-mile-long form of a witch. And then Krishna sucked the life from her, and then she just crashed on the ground like that and died. So then at that time, all the Brijbasis, they ran outside, feeling great distress, looking for Krishna. And when they ran out, they saw that the demoness was 12 miles long, huge demoness, and her breasts looked like small hills, small mountains. And Krishna was just playing on her chest, as a baby, like that. That is the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the Brijbasis, they had to get rid of the body, because it's not very convenient for your cow pastures to have a 12-mile-long witch in the middle of, you know. Imagine if we had a 12-mile-long witch in the middle of New Nundagram. It would not be very convenient for our agricultural pursuits. So therefore, the Brijbasis, they cut her body up into different sections and they set fire to her body, like that. And then from memory, I think, I can't remember exactly the details, but I think that very beautiful perfume aroma came from her body when they burned her, because she'd been purified by contact with Krishna. So she had this realization at the time when she faced Krishna that this was the supreme absolute truth. And this means that the demoniac propensity, or the demoniac mentality within her consciousness, it became purified at the last moment. Because at the moment of death, she realized she'd made a great mistake, and actually she should be surrendering to this person who she is trying to kill. Instead of being inimical or envious of this person, she should be friendly towards this person, or actually develop a service attitude towards this person. So we see this happens many times in Krishna's pastimes with the demons. And when Krishna kills the demons, he gives them great benediction. He liberates them. Whoever comes in contact with Krishna, it is said by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, He has five qualities which distinguishes him even from Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So one of those five qualities is that he gives liberation to his enemies. So this is Krishna's potency, that even when someone comes towards him as an enemy, he gives that person liberation. And there's no one else who has the potency or the power or the ability to do that. Krishna is the only person who can liberate someone who comes towards him, even in an envious condition. So Jarasandha here is having a realization, according to Sridhar Swami in his commentary. He is suspecting that he's challenging Jarasandha. He's saying, come towards me and kill me, or else I will kill you. I will send you to the heavenly planets. Because if the Kshatriyas die on the battlefield, because they're fulfilling their dharma or their religious duty, if the Kshatriyas die on the battlefield, or if the Brahmanas die after performing sacrifice, then they attain the heavenly planets. They take birth in Swargaloka, that is their benediction. So having that in the back of their minds helps a lot. If you're going to run onto the battlefield and die, possibly, you know, it's very comforting to know that, well, it's okay because I'll be born in the heavenly planets. Same logic is used by the Muslim extremist terrorists. The ones who flew the planes into the World Trade Center 5 years ago, then they had their consciousness, or they found some letters which they wrote, which they left in their hire cars and so forth. And they said in the letters that we do not worry, brothers, because soon we will attain heaven. Soon you will attain paradise. But unfortunately, there's no Shastric evidence to support that if one cowardly commits violence or tries to murder someone in a cowardly way, there's no evidence to support that those personalities will go to the heavenly planets. Whereas those who die in a heroic way or with chivalry and die following Dharma, then they are elevated to the heavenly, to Swarga. They get that benediction. So Jarasandha says to Balaram, come and fight with me. And when I kill you, you will go to Swargaloka. You'll go to heaven. Or you may kill me. So he gets the realization when he looks at Lord Balaram and he sees his form, which is the personification of beauty. Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna are the two forms of Godhead which possess the 64 qualities which of Godhead which in the fully manifest, which are mentioned by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion. Lord Narayan and Lord Ramachandra and Lord Nrisingadev and all these other forms of Krishna, these other incarnations of Krishna, they have 60 qualities, which Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion. But Lord Krishna has four extra qualities, which are not shared by the other avatars. And Lord Balaram also possesses those four qualities in full, fully manifest. So the first one is Rupa Madhurya. Rupa Madhurya means his form is unlimitedly sweet and beautiful. So when Jarasandha sees his form, it's not ordinary. Right? It's not an ordinary form. It's obvious that this form is the personification of beauty. And not only the personification of beauty, but it is spiritual beauty, which far surpasses material beauty. It is said that, just like on Monday we were speaking about the apsaras in heaven, Urvashi, Menaka, all these beautiful apsaras who are very famous. So it is said that the most beautiful women on earth are like frogs compared to the heavenly damsels, compared to Urvashi, compared to Menaka, compared to these personalities. Then the women on earth, even the most beautiful women, are like frogs. So that shows the gradation of beauty like that. But then the beauty of the spiritual forms of the gopis and Krishna's wives and Dwarka and all of Krishna's associates far surpasses even the material forms or the subtle forms of the demigods, of the devas, is far more beautiful than even that. So when Jarasandha saw the beauty of Lord Balaram, he had this realization that Lord Balaram is not an ordinary personality. He has an unlimitedly beautiful spiritual form. And he had a realization upon seeing that form. So Balaram and Krishna are unlimitedly beautiful, equally, like that. And then Rupa Goswami also explains that the prema madhurya, or the love of the devotees for Krishna and the love of the devotees for Balaram, surpasses the love of the devotees for any of the other incarnations. This is because of the childhood pastimes of the Lord. You'll see in the other incarnations of the Lord, generally, there are not childhood pastimes. Maybe with the exception of Lord Ramachandra. In Lord Rama, we'll see some childhood pastimes there. We'll see some of the other rasas beginning to manifest in Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. But in terms of Lord Narayan, or Lord Nisringadeva, or Lord Varaha, or you never hear of the mother and father. You never hear of the childhood pastimes. You never hear of this kind of rasa manifesting, this kind of prema manifesting, the prema of the love of the parent for the child. Right? And because the love for the parent for the child is very sweet, this makes Krishna's pastimes far more attractive even than Lord Narayan's. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was travelling in South India, he went to Sri Rangam and he stayed in the house of 4 months during the rainy season of Venkata Bhatta, who was the father of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So when he stayed in the... Because in South India, when you go to South India, the temples are mainly Lakshmi Narayan temples. You don't find temples of Radha and Krishna very often like that. So mainly we have the Lakshmi Narayan temples within South India. So therefore the mood is the mood of Vaikuntha, which is Aishwarya, which is awe and reverence. The sweetness of Vrindavan and the higher rasas which are found in Vrindavan are not experienced so much. So Lord Chaitanya, he would joke with Venkata Bhatta, because Venkata Bhatta was a great devotee of Lakshmi Narayan. He was in this Vaikuntha mood. And Lord Chaitanya, who was in the mood of the bridge buses, he was in the mood of Srimati Radharani, or he was in the mood of the resin, the bridge buses' love for Krishna in that mood. Then Lord Chaitanya would joke with Venkata Bhatta, and he would say, "Why is it that your Lakshmi, who is the most chaste woman in all the universe, the most beautiful and chaste woman within all the creation, why is it that she is attracted to my Krishna? Why is it that if she is the most chaste wife, and no one is more chaste than Lakshmi, no one is more devoted to their husband or their spouse or their master than Lakshmi is to Narayan? No one is more devoted. Yet, Lord Chaitanya said to Venkata Bhatta, why is it that your Lakshmi is more attracted to my Krishna than even Lord Narayan? Because she went to the forest of Tapavan. If you go to Vrindavan and you cross the river Jamuna from the other side of Vrindavan, on the other side of the river, on the western bank, then there's one forest there called Tapavan. And in that forest, for thousands of years, Lakshmi performed austerities in order to enter into the rasa dance as one of the gopis or one of the associates of Krishna. Because even though she's the wife of Lord Narayan, she understands that Krishna and Narayan are non-different, but she is more attracted to the pastimes of Krishna, because the rasa lila of Krishna is unlimitedly attractive compared to the pastimes of Lord Narayan. There's no rasa lila in Lord Narayan's pastimes. So she performed austerities, and then Krishna appeared before her, and Krishna said, "What benediction do you desire?" And then Lakshmi said, "I desire the benediction that I can enter into the rasa dance and dance with you amongst the gopis." And Krishna said, "In order to do that, you have to take birth from the womb of a gopi." And Lakshmi was not willing to do that. She was not willing to make that sacrifice, to take birth from the womb of a gopi. Because if you take birth from the womb of a gopi, you have to grow up in a village as a gopi. And what do the gopis do? What is their daily activities?
Milk cows.
Make fuel. They have to make fuel out of the cow dung. Right? You get the cow dung, they make the fuel. So Lakshmi, who is the goddess of fortune, she is the supreme goddess of fortune, she was not willing to enter into a village and make cow patties during the day, even if it meant she could dance with Krishna at night. You know, because it meant that she would have to give up her mood of being Lakshmi. She wanted to enter the Rasalila and dance, but she didn't want to give up that mood of being the queen or being the supreme goddess of fortune. So therefore Krishna said, you cannot enter like that. But Krishna, then she asked Krishna, then please let me become Sri Vatsa. So Krishna allowed that benediction. So you'll see on Krishna's chest, next time you see Krishna, you'll see that Krishna has a blonde tuft of hair on his chest. He has a very small blonde tuft of hair, just a very small piece of hair on his chest, and that is Lakshmi. She resides on his chest eternally in that form, so she can witness all of the pastimes of the Rasalila and all these things, but she can't actually enter into it in the form of a gopi or in the form of Lakshmi. So we see that Krishna's beauty and Balaram's beauty and Krishna's prema, that love of Krishna's devotees and the love of Balaram's devotees surpasses all the other devotees within creation. And then there is the Leela Madhurya. Leela Madhurya means the sweetness of his leelas, of his pastimes. This means the sweetness of the Rasa Leela, the sweetness of all the pastimes in Vrindavan. You will not find those kind of pastimes outside of Vrindavan. So this sweetness surpasses the others. And then the final sweetness, which only Krishna and Balaram possess, is Venu Madhurya. And Venu Madhurya means the sweetness of the flute of Krishna. So it is said that even Lord Narayan plays a flute sometimes. Not that Lord Narayan cannot play a flute. It's not that Lord Narayan does not play a flute. Lord Narayan plays a flute, but when Lord Narayan plays his flute, it does not compare with the sound which is made in Krishna's flute. Because the mood, when Krishna plays the flute, he's playing the flute in a particular mood and particular melodies and particular ragas in order to attract the devotees who have particular moods of devotion towards him. So he plays the flute in a conjugal mood, right? In order to attract his lovers, in order to attract the gopis. So when he plays the flute in that mood, Lord Narayan does not play it in that same mood or in that same raga or in that same sweetness. So it does not compare to Krishna. And Balaram also plays that flute in the same way. He also has the ability to play the flute. Balaram also has a Rasa Lila. Balaram also has his own gopis. They're different to Krishna's gopis. Krishna has his gopis and Balaram has his gopis. They're different. They don't cross. Radharani never enters into Balaram's camp. Right? Balaram never enters into Krishna's camp and dances with his gopis like that. So the pastimes are kept separately. But Krishna and Balaram are equal in all respects. So therefore when Jarasandha, when he sees Lord Balaram in this pastime, just by seeing Lord Balaram, he gets the realization this is the supreme personality of Godhead. And his heart begins to change, it begins to manifest. And then in verse 19, in the next verse, then Krishna speaks a very heroic sutra, or a very heroic verse, or a very heroic sentence. So this is Krishna in chivalrous rus. Within the nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswami explains there are five principal rasas and seven secondary rasas. And these secondary rasas, they enhance the feelings of the primary rasas. So one of the rasas, one of the secondary rasas is chivalry, that mood of being chivalrous, like that. Now, when do we see that mood manifesting in Krishna's pastimes? With Bhishma? Yeah, when Krishna is fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra with Bhishma, then that mood of chivalry manifests. He becomes chivalrous on that. When else do we see Krishna manifesting that pastime, that mood?
With the
what?
With the demons.
With all the demons, yeah. You just see when Krishna fights with Kaliya, he climbs up on the Kadamba tree on the bank of the river Jamuna, and before he jumps into the river, then he gets into a chivalrous mood. Right? He's ready to fight. He's ready to have some battle with Kaliya. He's ready to have some rasa. It means enjoyment. There's an enjoyment in fighting. Right? You have to get pretty worked up, but there's an enjoyment in fighting. Just like I remember last year, we had to go to the embassy, the Kazakhstan embassy, when we were in India last year. We were in Vrindavan, And we had to go to the Kazakhstan embassy in Delhi because the Kazakhstan government attacked the property of ISKCON, the temple of ISKCON in Kazakhstan. So all the devotees, many devotees, hundreds of devotees, came from Delhi and all from Vrindavan and around that area of India. We all came to Delhi. And then we had a protest outside of the Kazakhstan embassy to protest about their government's attacking our temple. So we were there, and there was hundreds of devotees. We were all lined up, and they were all chanting slogans in Hindi. I didn't know what they were saying, but they were getting very, you know, fired up like that. So I was just going along. I was just, you know, every time they shouted something, everyone would punch their fist in the air. So I was just getting into it. You know, I didn't know what they were saying, but you know, I was like, you know, like that. So everyone was getting, you know, very. So we got to a point. We were marching down the road towards the embassy. And we got to a point and the police barricaded the road. So the police were there, they barricaded the road, and then we got to the barricade, and then the devotees started to push the barricades. So they pushed the barricades and they charged through, and they all, you know, and then it really started getting like fired up. And then they were chanting more and chanting more, and then they got to the Kazakhstan embassy, the actual embassy. And then there were police with machine guns and everything, like special force, you know, standing outside guarding the embassy like that. And devotees were getting very worked up. And then I got a feeling of what it would have been like to have been in a battle, like Kurukshetra or something like that. That feeling was coming. You know, the fear, or like when Lord Chaitanya led the civil disobedience movement and he took all the devotees to the house of the Chankazi. And it says when they got to the house of the Chankazi, the devotees went wild because the Kazi had come and stopped the kirtans and smashed the mridangas. He'd sent his men to stop the kirtans. So when the devotees got to the Kazi's house, they went wild. And they started tearing his garden apart and they pushed down his fence and they were completely, they were ready to destroy the place. And I think some of the devotees were shouting out, kill the Kazi, kill the guy. Like it was becoming, so I was experiencing what it was like, that kind of mood. You know, when you get that many devotees together and you start getting that mood happening, you can actually feel like, okay, I'll die. You know, let's kill, you know, let's like kill these demons and, you know, attack these Kazakhstan government and kill them and, like that, and you actually feel like you go into that mood. That is the chivalrous rus. That is the feeling of chivalry, like that. It is braveness, it is heroism, it is courage, like that. So Krishna, in his pastimes, he shows this rus sometimes. So we see that when he fights with the different demons, he shows this rasa, or this chivalrous mood. Just like there was one demon, I think it was Pondraka, when Krishna was living in Dwarka. And this demon, Pondraka, he wrote a letter to Krishna. And he said in the letter to Krishna, he said, let us see who the real Vishnu is. You are claiming to be Vishnu, you are claiming to be Narayan. Let us see who the real Vishnu is. Come to my city and we will fight. We'll step outside and we'll find out who is the real Vishnu. So Krishna got into this chivalrous rus. Because Krishna is a Kshatriya. In Dwarka, Krishna is a Kshatriya. He plays the role of a Kshatriya. So Krishna got into this chivalrous rus and he wrote a letter back to Pondraka. And he said in the letter, yes, my dear friend, you are a frog. Right? And you are croaking like a frog. A frog croaks all sorts of useless sound vibration. He said, you are croaking like a frog. And there is a black snake called Krishna who is going to crawl down your hole very soon and devour you. So be waiting for this time. So then Krishna came to his city, and Krishna stood outside of his city with his army, ready to fight with Pondraka. And he called Pondraka, he said, come out of the city and fight. So Pondraka came out, and he attached two extra arms to his body. So it looked like he had four arms, you know. So then Krishna just smiled. Krishna just said, well, you know, this guy really needs, you know, some punishment. He really needs to be rectified. So I think it was in one of the fights, I think it was that one, I can't remember which one, but I think it was in that one. Krishna decapitated his head and then with his arrow he shot his head off and then his head went flying back into the city, over the wall into the city. And all the citizens like ran up, you know, what is that that just came flying over the wall? And they looked and they were shocked, it was their king's head. Right? So then they realised, okay, you know, we could be in big trouble here, you know, our city may be conquered. But Krishna said, no, it's okay. No one, you know, no one else has to be disturbed like that. I'll just protect all of you. All of you can become my citizens, my devotees, and you'll be under my protection. So Krishna gets into this chivalrous rus, right? He likes this, it's one of the rusas which he experiences. So just like when he climbed up on the tree in Vrindavan and he was about to fight Kaliya, on top of the tree he began to slap his arms, right? In front of all the cowherd boys, right? And he slapped his arms, like, okay, let's have a fight, like that. And all the cowherd boys became very, they began to cheer and clap, and they began to cheer Krishna on, come on, kill him, like that. So then Krishna dove deep into the Jamuna, and Kaliya came up, and Krishna got on his head and began to dance across his hoods. And every time he danced on his hoods, he felt like it was a thunderbolt smashing him in the head, like that. And he just pounded him and pounded him. And you'll see even amongst the cowherd boys, they have this chivalrous rust with Krishna. Often when the cowherd boys are in the fields, when they're playing with Krishna during the day, then quite often they challenge Krishna and Balaram to wrestling matches. So then there's big wrestling tournaments, right? And all the Balaram takes one side with half of the cowherd boys, and Krishna takes the other side with the other half of the cowherd boys, and they have a big wrestling match. And then they say whoever wins, the losers have to carry the winners on their shoulders. And Krishna, very often, he loses, because he's wrestling with one of his friends, and he sees it's the desire of his devotee to win, to defeat him in the wrestling match. So Krishna gives in, right? And he lets him win. He lets the other cowherd win. And then the cowherd boy says, just see, you know, you're claiming that you're such a big fellow. You know, you think you are the son of the king of Nanda Maharaj, but just see, I have defeated you today in battle. Right? So you can carry me all around this forest. So Krishna picks up his friend and he carries him all around the forest on his shoulders like that. And his friend is riding on Krishna's back thinking, yes, I am the victor. So this is rasa. This is the rasa of chivalry. In the Nectar of Devotion, it describes that sometimes Subal, who is one of Krishna's friends, the cowherd boys, they carry sticks in order to herd the cows. When they're controlling the cows, they carry sticks. So sometimes Lord Balaram carries a club. So Lord Balaram has a club, which is a big weapon, and Subal has a stick, which is just for controlling the cows. And then Subal challenges Balaram with his club. He says, come and fight with me. He says, let us see what sort of a warrior you are. So Balaram comes with a club to fight with Subal, and Subal just has a stick, and he stands there with one hand on his waist, and with his stick he just fights with Balaram. And Balaram's, you know, swinging the club, and he's just like that, fighting him. And then Krishna applauds, and Krishna said, excellent, excellent. He said, you are such a wonderful fighter. You're such a chivalrous warrior, like that. So this is there. It gives pleasure to Krishna in his pastimes. He likes this pleasure. So here Krishna says a very heroic verse in this mood of chivalry. He says to Jarasandha, real heroes do not boast, but rather they show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and who wants to die. So he's speaking to Jarasandha in a very powerful way. And this is the mood of the Kshatriya. The mood of the Kshatriya is that he does not simply speak, but rather he acts. That is his mood. And you see, Srila Prabhupada, in a lot of Prabhupada's examples in his preaching, he uses this military kind of jargon, or this military kind of language. That he speaks about warriors, he speaks about generals, he speaks about fighting on a battlefield. He says that when we become a devotee of Krishna, we declare war on Maya. Right? So that's the mood of the devotees. We have to have some of that spirit. If you want to stay a devotee for year after year after year after year, decade after decade, lifetime after lifetime, for eternity, if you want to stay a devotee, you have to have that spirit. Right? Like a warrior spirit, like a chivalrous spirit, like a kshatriya spirit. You have to be ready to fight on the battlefield. Always going forward. Right? Always attempting to reach Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's one of our great acharyas, in his commentaries, he also uses this same analogy. He says the mood of a devotee when he's trying to go back to Godhead is like a warrior on the battlefield. The warrior on the battlefield will be shot with many arrows, but he does not discontinue the fight. Right? He keeps fighting, he keeps marching forward. And you'll see the great kshatriyas in history, even when they're shot with arrows, right, they'll just break the arrow off, throw it on the ground, and keep charging, keep fighting. So Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says that has to be the mood of a devotee in going back to Godhead. We have to have this mood that we want to go back to the spiritual world. We want to attain Krishna at any cost. And we will be tested by Maya, just like on the battlefield. We're shot on the battlefield, you'll be shot with many arrows. So when you're trying to go back to Godhead, Maya will give you many, many tests. Right? She will try to destroy your efforts. She'll try to take away your enthusiasm. She'll try to trip you up. She'll try to allure you with sense gratification. She'll give you so many other paths to follow except devotional service to Krishna. Right? This is, in Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasa Yatmika Bhuti Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Next one. Bahu Shaka Yanantascha Budu Yo Vyavyasayinam. So, Bahu Shaka Yanantascha. It means on the path of Maya, there is Bahu Shaka, which means unlimited branches, unlimited different options. Just like we can walk out of this temple after class this morning, we walk out of the temple and you have unlimited options. Right? You can get on a plane and you can go to Fiji, to France, to Upper Volta, right? To Botswana, to the Himalayas, to China, Japan, Malaysia, Philippines. Yeah, you take your pick. Bahu Shaka. Maya's got unlimited options for you to take. Right? But with Krishna, there is only one Ekeha. Kuru Nandana. Vyavasa Yatmika Bhuti. The mood of a devotee is that Ekeha means one point. The devotee is fixed on one point, and that is his service to Krishna. And the devotee has to pass this test. This test continuously comes every day for every single devotee. Do you want to serve Krishna, or do you want to serve Maya? That is the mood that the devotee has to be in. He has to be fixed on service to Krishna. Because Maya will try to deviate us from our service every single day. But a devotee has to become more and more and more determined to go back to Godhead. And you have to understand, the longer you stay a devotee, the more difficult the tests become. Don't think that everything gets easier the longer you stay a devotee. It doesn't. It gets harder. The tests become bigger, like that. But Srila Prabhupada points out, the spiritual master never gives a service to the devotee, or never gives a test to the devotee, which he does not also give the ability to the devotee to pass that test. Right? Within every single test we face in our Krishna consciousness, there is always the ability to pass the test. That is always there. It doesn't matter how difficult things become. Krishna will always allow us to pass the test, but he is testing us, which means he wants to see, are you going to stick with me? Even when it's becoming difficult. And if we pass the test, then Krishna will give us the strength to pass that test in due course of time. So this has to be our mood. We can't have this mood of, oh, you know, it's too difficult today. You know, I don't feel like doing my service today. It's too difficult. You know, my mind hurts. You know, my body hurts. My intelligence hurts. My false ego hurts. You know, we can't have this mentality. The mentality of a devotee, and actually I remember Tamal Krishnamurti said in one lecture, he said, if you want to understand who the advanced devotees are, the advanced devotees in our movement are the ones who stick to their service year after year after year. Not that they're changing service every, you know, couple of months. You know, not doing, now I'll do this service, oh no, you know, I don't like this, I don't have enthusiasm for this, you know, then I'll do this service, then I'll do that service. No. The steady devotees, the advanced devotees, the ones who stick to their service that they're given by their spiritual master, year after year after year after year. Right? That is a symptom of advancement in Krishna consciousness. So we have to become those kind of devotees. We have to pray to our spiritual master that we can become those kind of devotees. Very fixed up, very steady devotees, like that. And if we had that mood, Tamal Krishnamurti used to tell this story, which we've told many times before, that one time, he was on the balcony in Juhu, in Bombay, with Srila Prabhupada. And he was saying to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, it is so difficult. Every day we have to go to the court because they were fighting for the land in Mumbai, the Juhu land. Every day we have to go to the court. You know, we are sannyasis. You know, I can quote the entire codes of the Bombay municipality. You know, but I can't quote very many verses from the Bhagavad Gita. You know, but you know, I'm so absorbed. My consciousness is just absorbed in this seemingly material work. And I'm finding it so difficult to keep up my enthusiasm. And he was going on, and he was complaining to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada cut him short. And Prabhupada said, "For so many lifetimes, you have served so many other masters. Now in this one lifetime, just give your entire energy to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And whatever you are lacking at the time of death, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will cover, and he will take you back to Godhead." So that is the mood of the devotees. We have to be in that mood. Right. We have to surrender to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whatever it takes, for one lifetime. Just give everything for one lifetime. And then, if there's any lacking, Mahaprabhu will come and he will take you back to Godhead. Like that. And that is our saving grace. And we saw in the lives of the great devotees, like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, we saw that's exactly what happened. At the end of his life, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he took him back. Because he dedicated everything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's service. That is the mood of the disciple. Like that. So here we see this is the mood of the Kshatriyas, and we also have to take this mood into our devotional service. We have to learn all these different lessons from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Here you mentioned about the when Krishna plays in food. So what I understand is usually he plays fifth note in his on his wife flute, fifth note, and also they say that normally whatever he's playing is usually he's called the Radharani in that flute. Have you heard of this? Can you give some comments?
If you like,
there is a song in India, they sing Kana Teri Muli Bajaye Radhana Lokal Meera Koi Mahi Badna. Mane, people are defaming Meera for attraction towards Krishna, but actually Krishna is always playing
There's one book by Maha Nidhi Swami called Appreciating Sri Vrindavan Dham. You know that book? So if you look in there, I think there's a chapter, it might even be about Krishna's flute. There's a whole chapter about Krishna's flute, otherwise it's somewhere in there. If you just look it up, it'll be in there. There's a section. And it says, within there, it says that Krishna has many notes on the flute. Like that first note, second note, third note, fourth note, fifth, sixth, seventh, eight. I think there's 8 or 9 notes which are there. And each note has a different effect. Like that. So if you look up there, then you'll see that.
Is there anybody know fifth note?
Yeah, if you look in the book, it will tell you what the fifth note does. I can't remember what the fifth note does.
And does he play the name of Radharani in the flute?
Yeah, there's one note where he plays, and he just plays that particular note for Srimati Radharani, to call Srimati Radharani. That's one of the notes. Like that. Any other question or comment? Just say the last sentence again.
So they worship the internal potency of the Lord, and he said that this refers to Subhadra, the sister
of Subhadra. Does it specifically say Subhadra meaning Krishna's sister?
Yes.
Subhadra? It does? Does it say Subhadra or does it say Krishna's sister Subhadra? Because Subhadra is also a name of Durga. Subhadra, like that. Su means auspicious, Bhadra means.
Lady.
Bhadra?
Lady.
Bhadra means auspicious and Su means very.
Yeah, so very auspicious. It means like that. Subhadra means very auspicious. It's also a name of Durga, like that. So I don't know if it would mean that they're praying to Krishna's sister, Subhadra. Krishna's sister, Subhadra, generally you don't hear about her in the pastimes in Vrindavan. Krishna's sister, Subhadra, is generally when Krishna goes to Dwarka, then Subhadra begins to manifest in the pastimes. So I think it would mean that they're praying, the gopis are praying to the internal potency. So Durga is the external potency, and her origin is the internal potency, which means Yoga Maya, because Durga is the personification of Mahamaya. Right? So the personification of Yoga Maya, or the internal potency, in Vrindavan especially, is Purnamasi. So the gopis, when they're worshipping goddess Kachiyani, as it says in the commentary, it says they're worshipping the spiritual goddess Kachiyani. Like that. And one of her names is also Subhadra. Kachiyani Durga Subhadra, that's one of her names. So I think they're worshipping the internal potency. I don't think they're worshipping Krishna's sister.
This internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister, known also as Ekanamsa or Subhadra.
Says Krishna's sister,
yeah,
specifically. Okay. So that means they're worshipping Krishna's sister.
Krishna's sister is also known as
Subhadra. Just show me. This internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister, known also as Ekanamsha or Subhadra. This is the Durga who was worshipped by the gopis of Vrindavan. Like that. This internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister. This is the Durga. Yeah, it says it, it's Krishna's sister. So it means that's who they're worshipping. Like that. Subhadra is, you know, because Subhadra is here on the altar, then Subhadra is a personification of the internal energy of Krishna. Srimati Radharani is a personification of the internal potency, Pladini Shakti.
Yeah.
And then Purnamasi is, she's an elderly gopi in Vrindavan. Right? Purnamasi is a personification of Yogamaya in Vrindavan. She arranges, Yogamaya means they arrange the pastimes for Radha and Krishna and the devotees in Vrindavan. So Purnamasi appears as an elderly gopi, and she has white hair, and she wears a white sari, like that. And she is a disciple of Narad Muni, and her son is Madhu Mangala, I think. Krishna is like that. So Purnamasi is Yogamaya. So she is a personification of the internal potency. Radharani is also personification of the internal potency, slightly different. One is Sladini Shakti specifically, one is Yogamaya specifically. And Subhadra is also part of the internal potency of Krishna. So it seems here from what's being said is that they're worshipping her in order, the internal potency, they're worshipping her in order to get Krishna as their husband. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's a bit confused.
Yeah, that's all I can say, because that's all it says. Any other questions or comments?